Hello, Brian.
Hi.
It is June 14th, and this is Paige Stewart interviewing you for our 30th anniversary zine and time capsule. Can you tell me about your role around the 90s, I guess, at CKUT?
Right. Okay. Well, I had a lot of different roles. I started off at like Radio McGill back before it was an undergrad in like 83, 84. Then I had sort of no contact for a few years. And then I came back in 88, shortly after the station started broadcasting. I started listening to it and it seemed exciting to be involved with something like that. That was, you know, the programming was good and it was, you could actually hear it because on Radio McGill, I never ever heard anything that was on Radio McGill, despite doing a show myself. So the whole thing seemed much more motivating. So I started off, I applied to do a show. I started off like the music program Friday mornings. And then I just was, you know, as a volunteer, answering phones, helping out, you know, doing whatever. And then from there, I became like the assistant music director for a little while, assistant to Chris, who was the music director at that time, Christoph Magone. And then he decided to move on, and so I got his job and became the music director for a few years. And then I did that from about 90, I think, till 93. And then and after 93, I did a show again, as just a DJ till I left Montreal, more or less, which was in 97.
What were some of the things that were happening in music around the time you were here?
I guess the things that I was more involved with were things like, you know, Musique Actuelle was, you know, big thing locally, especially. Like the Ambiance Magnétique label was going strong, I guess, in its early years, starting up more, maybe. René Lussier, Jean Derome, and that crowd, but they in particular were still playing together as a duo at that time. And then their increasingly diverse, ambitious, separate projects. Also, college indie rock was kind of booming, although it was the years like before Nirvana. Nirvana came kind of right at the end of that, and it sort of jumped to another level of like industrial scale, but there was like lots of smaller labels and like a thriving world of, you know, college radio, the kind of college radio ecosystem of supporting that music. Dance hall was like coming on strong and was big on the radio at CKUT in particular, with like West Indian Rhythms and Butcher T and Janis. Positive Vibes, I guess, and hip hop also, like that. Those were the sort of early, like flowering of like a, you know, Public Enemy and De La Soul, and sort of like the golden age era hip hop of the late 80s, early 90s was very big. Both of those acts in particular were huge at CKUT and, Boogie Down Productions and, so the sort of, again, I guess this increasing ambition in hip hop at that era, from early Run DMC, Grandmaster Flash era. I think those are the things that stand out to me right away, I guess.
Before you were the music coordinator, what was your show like?
My shows were always really a bit of everything and nothing in particular. So I just like, made up to some like a point of pride to not be in any particular bag and just play like anything that seemed interesting to me, or that, you know, seemed like it had, you know, some life to it or was in some ways like exciting. And particularly I like, you know, finding things that I didn't think were getting any exposure and digging them out. But so that's good. So it was all over all those things I mentioned. But I guess particularly like a lot of like new music, Musique Actuelle, and like kind of weird art rocky stuff was probably a big part of it. And then, but mixed up with like country and R&B and hip hop and whatever seemed interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. So when you became the music coordinator How did you change the station from being kind of a campus radio station to getting more out there and, yeah, moving away from college rock and stuff like that? How do you think you changed programming?
I mean, the change was already happening in that, you know, a good amount of the programming we had was being done by people who weren't students at that continued. I confess that I didn't do a lot of like positive recruitment in terms of like going out and finding people, but you know, I definitely was open, and it like you know, I think the fact that we were on the airwaves was kind of their biggest recruitment initiative. People heard us and found us and were and you know had interest, so they came to us. And so I was, you know, I would say like I definitely was eager to encourage anybody who wanted to come on and had something like seemed like they had something distinctive to offer, some like access to musical areas that weren't being explored, or that and I thought people would want to hear more from, and that included like some you know, like Montreal, I guess still doesn't, but didn't have any kind of black music radio station. So there was a lot of like, you know, finding people from the community came in to play reggae and hip hop and R&B, and you know, people who were musical obsessives who came in who seemed like they could do a program and had an interest, and I would, you know, encourage them and, you know, guide them to if they needed it. Or some of them had already had experience, like Dan Berman, who came from New York and brought a wealth of music that he had been exposed to from all over the world and was eager to do a show for us. And yeah, it was more, I guess, just an openness to that. And so that if anything, like it was more of an issue to try to like maintain like a good representation of student programming as well.
What was the relationship with McGill like?
I didn't have a lot to do with it directly. I mean, we had like students coming in constantly for, you know, to get involved, to volunteer, to do, to, you know, to be trained, to, but, you know, McGill, the university administration, they didn't seemed very interested in us for the most part, and I think wanted us just not to cause trouble.
Yeah.
Not to like embarrass them in different ways by, you know, by the programming or by our associations.
Can you tell me a little bit about your coworkers or fellow programmers?
Well, one of the things that was most inspiring to me is I met a lot of people at CKU. Most of my friends, even now, even though I live across the continent, come back to that era. Were made in that era somehow through the radio station, either directly as like people who also worked at the station, or so they were people that I came into contact with thanks to the radio station. But even beyond that, the, like when I first got involved, it was just really inspiring me to see the sort of the energy and the thoughtfulness, the critical like intellect of like a bunch of people that were there that I had never like encountered in that way. Like I had mostly been in school and worked, you know, here and there, but nothing that passionately. And but there were people at the radio station like Ian Pringle and Lisa Weinbaum and Chris Magone in that era who just like they had strong ideas and really interesting ideas, and they sort of opened my mind in a lot of ways to think, you know, a lot of it was internal things about how to run an organization, how to interact with people, how to like equity in the management or the of the organization. And then a lot of it was like what, you know, our mandate should be and what kinds of things we should be doing and how to approach that in a thoughtful way. But it was like it was a very inspiring and like powerful experience for me. You know, definitely was probably like the most exciting group of people I've ever worked with.
Cool. Same. even now. Did you have a vision for CKUT?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I think I had a lot of like idealism about it, but it's hard to directly access that now. But I think thought of it as really providing like broad like balance or corrective to like the gaps and errors of the media, both in terms of like information and cultural information, and just like, you know, giving people in the community a voice to express their own perspectives on what was going on around them, on how the city and the world around them was being run and shaped, and also to like broaden, like I was more on the cultural side than the political side. I very much respected the political mandates of the station, but it was less directly a part of my programming, and the programming that I was like, you know, helping bring to air. So, but it was the idea of giving people like an opportunity to express themselves to the public at large and to their rest of their community, both internally and to the wider world, the diversity of like perspectives and cultural activities that were going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like an important thing to do with. And that the internet was just coming in a bit towards the end, but it didn't really have nearly the like the bandwidth or the accessibility that it does now. And so like finding a lot of these things was much more work, mm-hmm. and having like a broadcast outlet for them felt like a way to like both be exposed to things or to communicate with one another in ways that, you know, were more readily available.
How did being the music coordinator at CKUT inform your future endeavors? And
when I left the station, I came to Los Angeles. Like, I continue to pursue the same personal interests that brought me to CKUT,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't really, I made a couple of, like, half-hearted attempts to get involved in similar things out here, but like I said, they were definitely half-hearted, and I never really took up that again, mm-hmm. beyond continuing to be unreasonably interested in, like, music and culture.
Yeah. Were you going to a lot of shows around Montreal when you were here?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I still do a fair bit. Yeah.
You come back to Montreal?
Yeah,
or
I still do here as well in LA, but yes, in Montreal too. Actually, more even in Montreal often. My wife and I have been going back to Montreal every summer for like mm-hmm. a few months a year.
Cool. So even though you didn't have the internet back then, it was basically being active in the music community that helped you find programming to promote and music to promote?
Yeah. I was always very like on the hunt, digging a lot. So in those days I was through magazines and writing to small labels or to distributors or record stores and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, and there were a few like resources that were particularly like valuable for under the radar music, like OP magazine, which became Option, which before finally closing, or Sound Choice, or like I guess a bit maybe around the same time, a bit later, like the early version of The Wire, and then there were newsletters and things like that as well,
mm-hmm.
And then just like combing the back pages of even more mainstream publications, you would often see things. The Village Voice was very strong then for music,
mm-hmm.
and so it was kind of also a good like compass for interesting things across a lot of different communities and styles of music. There were active tape trading networks, and I tend to be a little more antisocial, so I wasn't so much involved in like person-to-person contacts with people. Or Chris was much more active in that world. I tend to be like a little bit like take a step back and just kind of survey a landscape from a bit of a distance.
Mm-hmm.
Just temperamentally, that's been more my way.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once you're at CKUT, then like things that were happening locally, a lot of people would come in to tell us about them, to promote them, but it was also would often require actually like contacting people and like expressing our enthusiasm about things to make that initial contact or get them into the orbit of the radio station, or maybe trying to push the relationship to another level of like doing co-promotions or having people come in and perform on the radio and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was very active in that. I really enjoyed having like trying to bring musicians into the station to play, to perform on the air, mm-hmm. even though we had like relatively like cramped facilities. We still were able to do a fair bit of that, and that was always fun.
That's awesome. That's good to know. Was it wild back then, or were things going smoothly?
I mean, I don't know if I would say wild, but it was a little more like seat of the pants, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I tend to be a, maybe also like that's like the way I run anyway. But you know, it just felt like, you know, very improvisatory, and there was a lot of, you know, desperate hunting for people to like fill in overnight air slots, and panics over, you know, is the funding going to be a funding crisis, or everything was, we doing the fundraising drives for the first time, like a lot of things where we were like just breaking into new areas where we just didn't know what would happen or how it would go. And so there was a lot of craziness like that, and like everything felt a little, like the studio and the physical space of the station was all like made up of cast off stuff that was like taped together and piled on top. And one summer I built a lot of records, like we didn't have enough space, we were getting in so much music. I didn't know how to really do carpentry, but I rented tools and bought a bunch of wood, and I was like building shelves in the hallway outside the station. It was that kind of like, I guess Mickey Rooney, let's put on a show, kids kind of feeling. But to me, it didn't feel wild. There were people who I know who were definitely more on the like party scene, and maybe they had a wilder experience. But it's maybe just my way to not have noticed.
That's fair. It takes all kinds to run a radio station.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of straight in a way, and so.
Okay. Were you building shelves at the current location on University Street?
No. Basically, my whole like life at the station was in the basement of the Student Union building.
Okay.
The William Shatner building. So like when it was Radio McGill, we were just crammed in there, and then we got, I think, a bit more space at CKUT, but it's still like, you know, we were just like sort of tucked into the back corner of the basement of the Student Union.
Okay.
And so everything was happening back there, and like there was, because we were in the back at the end of the corridor, we sort of also could appropriate the corridor for special purposes.
Yeah.
And like most meetings that I held were on the floor in the corridor outside of the station, and most, you know, and the construction activities and whatever else. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I needed a moment of quiet, that would be where I would end up, is in the corridor outside.
Yeah. That's funny, because Ian was talking about the corridor being like a boardroom for debates.
Yeah, we had all the meetings out there, so...
Okay, yeah.
Like programming committee and steering committee, everything like that. Because, like, in the station, there wasn't really enough room to get a bunch of people together around a table.
Yeah.
And plus, like, people would be coming in and out, and then you could go to the end of the corridor, and you sort of had, like, kind of, like, you could create an illusion of privacy, or, like, a sort of phantom barrier that would keep, you know, give you some privacy and have a meeting.
Do you have anything else you want to say in closing, or... Do you listen?
Do I listen now?
Now? Can you hear your influence?
Yeah, I just recently got like a table radio that is Wi-Fi enabled, because I've wanted, like, there's a lot of internet radio that I'm interested in. And there's stations like CKT that you can get now over the internet. But somehow listening on my computer has not been appealing to me.
Yep.
So I have listened a little bit lately, and I listen a bit when I'm back in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
What's amazing to me is how often like I turn it on and I hear people that I know still.
Yeah.
Like the first day I turned it on here in LA, it was Tony Butcher T doing a show, and that was amazing to me, and I loved it. But, you know, it's kind of a personal thing. Like hearing voices of people that I know is always, on CKT, is always a thrill for some reason. And I actually really like just listening to the DJs talking, especially when they're people that I know, because it's kind of like visiting, you know. And so that was great. I guess another influence is that I developed a habit as a music coordinator, popping awake around 3 a.m. when the overnight radio shift changed, because of how frequently the second DJ would fail to show up.
Yeah.
And so I would get a phone call, and sometimes I'd have to run down there or whatever. And that habit has kind of stayed with me. a little bit. So I still do tend to pop up around that hour. But it, yeah, I hear exciting new things on there. It seems like even more tightly knit to the local music scene, which has really exploded since I left town. That's super cool. And so I do check it out.